welcome to the lighter side of the dark side and the lighter side of the dark side of his balls. This is the Dark Mark Show. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and I'm going to turn this around.
What is that? Is that a sex toy?
It is a sex toy, but I use it as a camera as well.
Oh, that is a camera. I didn't know that. All right.
And I actually, you're off camera, but I'm pointing the camera at everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Good evening.
Good evening. We're going to have a fun one, Nicole.
I'm looking forward to it.
You just met this person, and, well, you got that, so that's good.
Yeah, that someone's come to party, I'll tell you that.
But you just met this person, and we've already been bantering like crazy.
Oh, no, yeah. He's funny. He's fun.
Yeah, and big star.
I hear, yeah.
I don't know about that, but
big star, I'm going to turn the camera around. This is New York City transit cop. Homeless cop, apparently.
Real quick, I was a member of the New York City Transit Police in the subway for 9 years. Our motto was, you ride, we hide. And then the NYPD took us over, and I did another 3 years as a member of the NYPD. So I was in two different police departments. And my shield was 1623 as a transit cop, and it was 1623 as a New York City cop. So I got two tattoos, 1623.
Is that so you don't forget or what?
That's
like,
funny.
Were you on patrol? Let me check what my badge number is.
In the last 7 years, to answer your question, I was in the homeless outreach unit. So no uniform. And we worked midnight to 8 in the morning. And we were like an Uber for homeless people all over New York City.
Wow, that's nice.
You were the Uber before Uber.
Yeah, we were Uber before Uber. And we also moved not regular people. We picked up 10, 15, 20 clients a night. We called them clients.
And you didn't have to charge us. You should have charged a cleanup fee, but you never did.
No, some of them were real stinkers. We would whisper each other, this one's a stinker, lights and sirens.
Right.
And we would go lights and sirens.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah, that's funny.
But Nicole.
Yes.
You know how I'm a comedy historian.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
This is how I should have introduced you. One of the classic stories about comedy that is an amazing story, everybody knows about it, is there's a New York City transit cop, started doing comedy, and then got a sitcom.
Oh, yeah.
And was in movies like Miss Congeniality, 15 Minutes with Robert De Niro, How to Lose a Guy in 30 Days, and has three, not one, but three fix-it shows on cable TV, and is headlining clubs all over the country, and one of the funniest and nicest people I've ever met.
Is that me?
That's him, John DeResta, right there.
And I thought you were going to say three kids on top of it.
Well, no, we're going to get to that.
All 11 months apart, dude.
Right. Wait, do the bit.
Which one?
The one about you.
On a honeymoon. It's a true story. On a honeymoon, we got married in Hawaii, up on the side of Diamond Head Mountain. We flew from Long Island to Hawaii. And on my honeymoon, my wife got pregnant. On our first anniversary, my wife got pregnant. Second anniversary, we took separate vacations. My wife got pregnant. You get it? She had sex with someone else.
Right. And his name is Tyrone.
You say Tyrone. We call him Cool Breeze. That's his slang name.
I think I was looking at an old tape of yours. Before we get going, because this is going to be great. I am drinking, because you're drinking coffee and Diet Coke for the double shot of caffeine, but I should have gotten you one of these.
What is that?
Raise energy drink.
Wow.
It's the best energy drink ever. Well, not just because it's our sponsor. I've tried them all, and this is the best.
Oh, no. I'll start. I drink about one to two a week. I'm usually coffee and marijuana at my workshop.
Well, this is great because this is Baja Lime flavored. It tastes like Baja Blast from Taco Bell, but they have Fruit Punch flavors. They have Galaxy Burst that tastes like Fruity Pebbles. They just came out with a new flavor, Nicole.
Oh,
I can't wait to try it. Ginger Ale.
Oh, yum.
But the best thing about Raise Energy Drinks, I'm going to pop the top right now, zero calories.
I was going to ask you, but what about sugar?
Zero calories, zero carbs.
Oh, wow.
Zero crash.
Oh,
and zero dyes.
I'm in.
And you can't get these in stores. You can get them at GNC's or Vitamin Shops, but why pay a full price? Go to the link in our show description and get 15% off a case of Raise Energy Drink. Let me take a sip.
Skol.
Oh, that's delicious. So, John DeResta. Now, That New York accent of yours, you grew up in Queens.
Oh, no, well, I was born in Far Rockaway, Queens, so I'm a real New Yorker, and that only hit me a couple of months ago, that because I grew up in Long Island.
Right.
But it hit me that my birth certificate says I was born in Queens, so I'm a legit New Yorker, like compared to just being from Long Island.
Right.
I was born in New York City.
Because I was born in Brooklyn, but I'm not really a New Yorker. We moved when I was like 3 years old.
Well, I think you're still, you're legit. What part of Brooklyn did you live as a kid?
I don't even know, because we moved when I was three. I didn't have a full cognizance then.
Yeah, I was raised in Far Rockaway, Queens, and you only have to drive maybe 2 miles, and you're in Long Island.
No, I've been, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Brooklyn and Queens are on Long Island, which mm-hmm. a lot of people don't know that. At the age of 2 years old, my dad moved us and my brothers to Long Island. But again, the first town in Long Island. Do you know anything about Long Island?
No, my grandmother and her husband were the last white people to live in Freeport.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm closer to right. If you go through a red, JFK is in Queens.
Right.
You go through a red light mm-hmm. and you're in Long Island, and you're in the town I grew up in. I'm in the first town.
Well, the fact that you say Long Island.
I don't even notice the accent. I've been in L.A. 24 years, and everyone always says to me, when people say to me, where are you from, Boston?
You kind of have a Boston lilt.
I don't notice it. I don't even notice the accent, but it's a Long Island accent, which has been enhanced most likely from being a New York City cop.
Of course.
In the subway, whether it's dealing with other New Yorkers or other New York City cops.
Well, yeah. It's funny because you say that, and I know you've said I've seen interviews of yours. You talk about doing shows in front of other cops, and
right.
then when you say you're a transit cop, you're
kind of
looked down.
Oh yeah, that's a great story. When you took the test in the '80s in New York City, there was one exam,
right?
And for every 10 guys that passed everything, every 10 guys, 7 went to NYPD. That's what everybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
2 went to transit. That's the subway. It's a completely different police department.
Right.
And 1 went to housing. Did you know there was such a thing as a housing police in New York?
No.
And all you did was work in the tenements, not even in a police car. But that was considered the best kept secret in law enforcement. Do you know why?
No,
why?
I don't.
Because every floor you had a sugar mama that would take care of you, both sexually, and they would cook food for you, and they knew you had benefits. You could marry a really beautiful young
So those are cops with benefits.
Benefits and benefits.
And yes. Benefits.
Yeah. But in 1994, the NYPD took us all over.
Right.
So I went from 9 years as a transit cop. Then overnight, literally at midnight, we had to change the patch on our windbreaker because I was in the homeless unit.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't wear a uniform.
Right.
So we at midnight.
Were you undercover or were you just?
No. Well, it was plain clothes, but just so you can go down in the tunnel and find homeless people. If we weren't driving them to the shelter, we had to actively seek them out and look for them for our clients.
Right. Because I wonder if you were undercover as a homeless guy, like you had to shoot
your pants. No, none of that. I did not like police work enough to get involved in like a decoy.
Right.
If you ever looked it up, it's real interesting. Transit cops would dress as bums and homeless people with gold chains. And, somebody would snatch the gold chain and now you arrest the criminal.
Wow.
I've
been robbed twice. Like, I had a snatch and grab. I chased that guy down.
Did you catch him?
I did. I caught him. He got scared. He threw my purse, and I got my purse back.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You should be a New York transit cop.
Yeah. You know who was a New York City transit cop? And watch this. If you really would have done your homework, very few people know this. Eddie Murphy, the greatest comedian that ever lived.
Really?
His father was a New York City transit cop.
Wow.
So Eddie Murphy's father was an actor, comedian, and New York City transit cop, much like John DeResta.
Yep.
And my daughter, I don't know if you know, is the manager at the Laugh Factory on Sunset. My daughter is the new manager. And I said to her, when you meet Eddie Murphy, because he's going to be working out, he got a Netflix deal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he got $70 million to do a Netflix special.
Oh, cool.
Right before the pandemic.
Okay.
Right.
So I said,
right
when
before
Eddie,
Netflix crashed.
I said, when Eddie Murphy comes in, you pull him to the side and make sure that you say, we have something in common. Both of our fathers were New York City transit cops. Very few people know that. And you know who else?
You must have known Eddie. Were you after Eddie Murphy in the clubs? Did you ever run across him?
No, I never met Eddie Murphy. I would tell him that if I did. And I only learned that only in the last few years. His father was killed when he was 5 years old.
Wow.
Off duty by a lover's quarrel. He wasn't killed on the job.
But a
few old timers knew him, said he was he was handsome, funny.
Yeah.
And also Abdul Jabbar.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
His father was a New York City transit cop.
Alcindor Senior.
Yeah. He was a Lieutenant Alcindor. I never met him, but he was a transit cop. And then the other famous two civil servants are Steve Buscemi, New York City fireman, 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and Eddie Money, the singer.
Right.
New York City cop, NYPD. Yeah. quit when he was in the academy. He never even graduated.
Wow.
So your story is kind of similar to Eddie Money's, but before we get to that, you got to have some, I mean, what was the craziest Subway story that you had to?
Well, when you're in the homeless outreach unit, even when you're off duty and live 50 miles away, you know so many of the homeless people in the Subway by their nickname or their real name that when about one or two a week get hit and run over by a train, but you never hear about it. Because they're in the dark, in the tunnel, right. no reflective vest, no flashlight, they're drunk, they're high. And they would call me and my partner at home, this is before cell phones, they would call me or Mike Venkis to come in and see if we knew the guy.
Wow.
To identify him, because they never had any ID.
Right.
So in turn, I had to look at about 15 or 20 people that were completely chopped up by the train.
That's so scary.
So yeah, that was one of the worst.
Was it tough to identify some of them?
I mean, like, just, we knew their nickname. Oh yeah, yeah, they can get cut up into a bunch of pieces. Mm. Yeah, and what was it? There was one. Oh, I have a photo. I'm a woodworker, and I have a big photo in my shop of me being a rookie cop with a bum or a client when I was still in uniform. I got a kick out of homeless people because you had no other friends.
By the way, kids, it was okay to call people bums in the 80s.
Yeah, or bumette if you had a female.
Right,
but. I have this photo, and in the photo was a guy who 5 years later, after we took the photo, he had maggots living in his feet. Aww. So that was one of the worst things. Yeah, you asked.
Is he single? Nicole's a...
that's funny.
I know you're into, you know, goth and weird horror stuff. You're a horror writer. Think of the story.
He had maggots living in his feet, and that was hard to look at. And you know, it was another weird thing.
Not his shoes, his feet.
In his feet, he had obviously some kind of open wound that wasn't taken care of.
Right.
This is another weird one that you should put this in one of your movies because no Hollywood writer could think of this. No Hollywood writer. We had a guy that went. He was like an EDP, like a psycho. So they had to tape him to a gurney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they like duct taped him his arms. And he was laying flat and yelling and screaming. And I looked, it couldn't help but look down in his mouth. He had teeth growing out of the roof of his mouth.
Oh.
I've seen a couple people like that.
Ooh. Wow.
Like four or five, like, weirdly put.
Extra teeth, yeah. I've heard about that.
Up and back.
Like Alien.
Yeah, I don't know. It was, yeah.
I think maggots is grosser.
Like, yeah, maggots is grosser.
But that probably hurt when those teeth came in. Like, can you imagine that? Just them cutting through the roof of your mouth?
I don't know.
I've seen some people like that. They just don't have a dental plan, and it's just like, ooh.
And there was a transit cop that was rumored to be a serial killer. I don't want to say his name, but there was a cop that...
John DiResta?
His first name is John. If you would have said his name, I would have busted out laughing. But I hated every second of it for 12 years, but now when I look back... You know, I miss it. I miss having friends. I miss carrying a gun. I miss having a steady paycheck.
Yeah.
I went from 12 years of steady paycheck in the bank every other Thursday to the last 24 years with no steady paycheck.
Yeah.
But some big highs.
Well, a lot of highs. And also, I might have been killed on 9/11. I left right before. I left about two years before.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, here's the legend. And this is a comedy legend. People talk about this everywhere you go. And, I mean, since I started doing comedy, people are like, did you ever hear the one about the guy who was a New York City cop? Somebody just saw him in a club and he got a sitcom. But that, there's way more to it.
It was way more calculated than that. I'll tell you real quick. I always wanted to be a comedian. This might be good for your listeners, but I had stage fright. I had living room balls. You know what living room balls is? Funny in the living room.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Cul-de-sac balls. You know, I was the funniest guy at the cul-de-sac Christmas party in someone's yard.
And by the way, just a sidebar, because, you know, people used to be afraid of public speaking. And apparently you were.
Right, of course.
It's been cured because everybody's doing comedy. My dry cleaner does comedy. I mean, so many people do comedy now. But back then, you know, people were scared to go on stage.
I did it once or twice when I was in my early 20s, and I got so nervous, so red-faced. It literally felt like there was a little human being inside my body with a sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. It felt like my heart was beating like five times a minute, and each beat was going to blow up. That's how just nervous and weird and didn't know how to. So I just chucked it. And that was like at the age of like 22, 23. I said, forget it. It's not for me. I know I'm funny, but I'm the king of the living room balls.
Right.
I'm funny at roll call, right, as a cop.
Right.
And then one night on the homeless outreach bus.
And did the other cops appreciate that? Or
without a doubt. Yeah.
Serious. Stop fucking around.
No. That's funny you say that. I gravitated towards a group of guys that all of us didn't give a shit.
Right.
Like, we, police work was the fifth thing on our list every night.
Right.
We were drunk. You know, we'd get drunk. We'd look to get laid on job time. There was this whole list of things that you could do on job time other than police work.
Right. You could get drunk and laid on police time.
Oh, dude, of course.
And this was the 80s. This was the 80s. A little coke, a little weed.
That's funny. In the 12 years, I got offered coke by one cop. Off duty at a bar in Long Beach, Long Island, mm-hmm. and even that kind of shocked me a little. So I didn't smoke. I was a pot smoker before I went in, and even on our honeymoon, my wife was smoking this really good pot in Hawaii, and I had a mask up. I invented the mask.
So you were wearing a mask pre-pandemic.
I didn't want to lose the job. Imagine testing positive and you didn't even smoke.
Oh yeah, right. Oh yeah.
And I had kids, you know. So no, never smoked any pot. Worked with one cop that I smelled pot on her breath. And I was like, it was a shock. I was like, oh, jeez. But no, I gravitated with a group of guys. All we did was look to have fun and goof on people and, you know, and do as little as possible.
Right.
Which, you probably know this, I had 9 arrests in 12 years.
You'd say that in your act. Is that true?
It is true. My own son has been arrested more than that. For real. My own son's been arrested so many times.
You must be so proud.
We lost count.
You must be so proud.
Yeah. Yeah. He lives at home. He's only 32.
Oh, we were just talking about that last week with Nicole about guys that were living in their house in their 30s.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, he pays $200 a month rent towards the $2,500 I pay.
Well, at least you charge them rent. A lot of these guys, they're not charging.
Well, you know what he does?
I was talking about the fact that girls don't want to date people that live with their parents.
No, I know. He does have a girlfriend, but here's what he pays me in. He works for a CBD company. It's legit.
Okay.
And he pays me in CBD joints. And then in turn, when I see you at some of these kind of backroom comedy shows,
mm-hmm.
I show up at 9. They say one more than you.
Right.
And I'm back in the car with a set in the phone at 9:15. You know why?
Why?
I give away CBD joints in a batch. You know what I mean? A lot of guys smoke them. So yeah. And I'm getting them for free. So I use them as a currency.
It's kind of like a prison system.
Yeah, that's funny. But here's what happened. I was 27 years old. I was on the homeless outreach bus, and I was cracking up the bums, cracking them up. Every night we had steady customers. We had fake AA meetings. We had a big city bus. Some night on a cold night, there'd be 15 or 20 clients.
Wait, fake AA meetings?
Yeah, as I was throwing them the sandwiches because we gave out food,
right?
I would, you know, I had all, you know, keep coming, you know, all these dumb AA, because they all of them had been in AA. Yeah, all of them. Come early, set up the chairs. It works
if
you
work it and you're worth it.
Yeah, step 8, you know, you got to make amends. All these catchphrases every night.
Well, step 1, shower.
Yeah, there you go. And one night, my partner Mike Venkus is reading the Village Voice, and this is after I completely gave up on comedy. It was a pipe dream. And mm-hmm. 27 years old.
Right.
And he's reading the Village Voice, and he goes, dude, comedy class. And it was like the heavens opened up. He goes, mm-hmm. look. He reads. He goes, look, 8 weeks, no pressure, right? No audience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then there's a graduation night. They give you a tape. And it was like the heavens opened up. And he lent me the money. I had two infants at the time. I had like a 6-week-old and a 1-year-old. My two oldest kids are 11 months apart, so they're the same age for 1 month every year. But we were done. We had a boy and a girl. We were done. I got off that morning, drove home. My wife is at 7 a.m. She has a crying infant in each arm. And I said, hey, I'm going to take a comedy class, and I need your support.
Right.
I said, and this is a true, this line is true. I said, it'll probably take 10 years to get paid. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I didn't know anything about stand-up comedy.
Right.
Other than I was a buff. I liked it. Dice Clay, you know, the whole bit. Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor. I had all the albums. And I said to my wife, I'm going to take this comedy class, you know. And I went on duty at this time at 9 at night in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And the class was every Wednesday at 7. Like, how convenient.
Perfect. Yeah.
It all worked out.
Yeah.
So
and 2 more hours away from the kids.
2 more hours away from her and the kids. So watch this. I said, I want to take this comedy class, but I need your support. It's not going to work if you're going to hold a grudge. And she's got a crying baby in each arm. There's a long pause, and she goes, I want a third child. If we have a third one, you got my support. And the first thing that went through my mind is, if I have 3 infants I have to feed on a cop salary, I'm going to drive everywhere to make the stand-up work. Like, in other words, if I'm going to jump into this, having one more kid is going to be that much more difficult financially, and it'll work for me.
So she wasn't just horny. She was just...
She liked the feeling of being pregnant. She liked kids. So Shannon was born 9 months later to that day, literally. And I took the comedy class. And watch this. Remember I said it might take 10 years
right.
to make a dime? Before she was even born, I was grabbing 50 here, 100 there, right. cop party, retirement party. And then I got my first weekend right around when my daughter was born.
Right.
Okay.
My first paid weekend, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Right, yeah, regular.
At Pips. Do you remember Pips? You heard about it.
I did Pips, yeah.
You did Pips?
I did Pips. I lived in New York very briefly.
Oh, okay.
I did all
McGuire's,
Governors.
Oh, okay, yeah, you did them all.
Like early 2000s.
Okay, and I started at New York Comedy Club.
Right.
That was where I took the class.
Right.
With Lee Frank.
Right.
Do you know Steve Marshall? Steve's my buddy. He's my comedy coach.
I might have met him, but it's like New York was a blur. I was there for 6-7 months, and I got in a car accident and had to move back.
Oh.
Like, I was done with L.A., and I was like, I'm going to try it in New York, and I was doing good. I got past the Gotham's, and I was doing shows at Broadway,
nice.
Comedy Club. All the Long Island, I would do all these Long Island shows. The best thing about doing New York comedy, I would do all these Long Island shows and just be absolutely filthy.
Oh, wow.
And then this guy's like, I got a gig for you, but I don't think you can do it, because it's clean.
Right.
It's at an ice cream parlor. I was like, I'll do it, and I was the only comic that was clean. Everybody else like slipped up, like, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
And then there was a family, and they would come in every week to see me.
Oh, wow. Do you remember what part of town it was in Long Island?
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
It's all a blur. But I also remember there was, I did a show with Otto and George.
Yeah, I was friends with them.
Well, the dummy too, yeah.
Yeah.
Otto and George, by the way, Nicole in our audience, very, very funny. Oh, just one of the funniest. Filthy ventriloquist, XXX
awesome.
Rated ventriloquist.
That sounds great.
And it was a college gig. It was him. He featured, I opened, and the headliner was the guy from Scarface, Chichi.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the Hispanic guy.
Yeah, Chichi get to
Yale. Yeah. And, I know his name. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Right. And it was weird because he did like his finale was he put on wigs and did Tina Turner and Cyndi Lauper.
Nice.
In like 2002.
Yeah.
So it was weird. Actually, no, it was pre-9/11, so it must have been 2001.
Yeah. His name is on the tip of my tongue. Angel Salazar.
Angel Salazar, yes.
Yeah, good guy. Yeah,
great guy.
Good guy. I did a table read for him for a movie,
yeah.
And it was all gangsters. It was all like real.
No, he was legit.
Real gangsters.
He was legit.
And, dude, they knew I was a cop. It was a weird little, it was a weird little thing.
Were you playing a cop?
No, I guess maybe, somebody with a New York accent. I just remember going into this table read, and I was like, oh, this could get dangerous. Compared to a table read in L.A. where you have the agents and the managers.
Right.
Every one of them looked like they had a gun.
Yeah.
I like Angel, though. So to answer your question.
There's a lot of table reads like that in L.A.
To answer your question about that someone saw me do one show and I got a sitcom, it didn't work like that.
Yeah. Well, first off, before you do that, tell me the boxing ring story.
Oh, okay. So I was
listen to this, Nicole.
I was a new stand-up comedian, and I just started to get paid, and I worked nights, and I had to sleep in my daughter's bed, my 4-year-old daughter's bed, and lock the door, and 3 little kids were running around outside the door. It was horrible. You know what I mean? But
like you were a big guy sleeping in a little girl's bed.
I was a fatso then, dude. I had more chins than a Chinese phone book.
No, it was actually. I did want to get to that.
Okay, well, hold on. We'll hold that.
Yeah, we're gonna put a bookmark in that because definitely.
And it was about I go on duty at 9:30 at night in Manhattan in the homeless unit. My wife wakes me up at 4 o'clock and says, "There's a guy named Tony Camacho on the phone," and he was a booker. I don't know if you remember Tony.
I don't know.
And he goes, "Hey, John," and this is before a cell phone, so the landline. He goes, "Hey, John, this is Tony. I got a gig for you tonight, but you got to let me know right now." I go, "What is it?" He goes, "It's a smoker." I said, "What is that?" He said, "It's a bunch of cops smoking cigars, and it's a boxing match, and you're going to open up for the boxing match." Now I'm thinking there's like 100 people. I go, "How many people?" He goes, 1,200.
Whoa.
He goes, "I'm going to warn you right now, they're drunk. They're going to be drunk." And no women. So it's like a real manly,
yeah.
And it's when you could still smoke inside.
Right.
And every one of them had a cigar. And I said,
It's like Fight Club.
And I kind of covered the phone and I said to my wife, "Pays $150, which right in today's money, that would be $1,000. Being a broke cop. I said, "What should I do?" And she goes, "Well, he's going to call Joe Badalamente if you say no." Yeah. He was the other cop doing comedy. So I said, "Tony, I'll be there." And it was in the Bronx at a place called Marina Del Rey, similar to the town here in L.A.
Yeah, and Marina Del Rey and the Bronx, they're very similar.
And I get there and sure enough, there is 1,200 drunken cops. All smoking cigars, and I go right to the corner of the ring, and the guy had a mic, and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, before we start the boxing, we have a comedian." And he didn't even finish the word comedian, and they all started to boo.
Oh, no.
That's what I had to step into. 1,200 cops, a good-natured boo, but a boo nonetheless.
Right.
They let me know, we don't think you're funny. Like, mm-hmm. imagine, you know, that's the challenge.
Yeah, yeah. Prove it, motherfucker.
So, prove it. Like, there's an old saying, and it took me a long time to learn this, never go up on a dare, because you're never going to win. Like, if someone says, you think you're funny?
Right.
You know, a group of people. So it was a good-natured boo, and I stepped in the ring, and I said, give me a break. I'm also a cop. So just to try to get him on my side. And sure enough, somebody yelled, sure you are. What? Because I had the comedy jacket, I looked more like a comedian, like, you know, bad magician. I said, give me a break, guys. I'm a cop. I'm a fellow cop. And someone goes, what precinct? I go, well, I'm transit. And they booed twice as loud. It was really funny. And it was a good-natured boo. And then I said, you know the transit police. Our motto is you ride, we hide. And all of a sudden, oh, this guy's got a funny. And then we don't say police don't move. We say transit, don't laugh. You know, and people say, do you carry? I said, I get the same question. You guys carry guns? You guys carry guns? You don't carry guns, right? You failed the police test. You don't carry guns. And I said, well, we carry a slingshot, but the bag of rocks gets a little heavy. So these are all these transit police jokes. And little by little, I turned this thing around, and I left to a huge applause break. And as I stepped through the ring, a guy came running up to me and said, dude, you were fucking funny. Can I get your number if we want to hire you? And I thought he was being sarcastic. Like, that's how your mind goes, oh, this didn't go that well. Even though they were laughing, you have the loser mentality of, And sure enough, it went really well. It was a lot of fun, and I probably got other gigs out of that. And someone said $150 and smeared me a $50 bill.
That's
you know, so now I'm driving to work that night with $50 and a $150 check, which only 9 months before I had said to my wife, it might take 10 years
to make
any money. And you know, I saved myself that night. Do you remember Jerry Cooney? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, the boxer.
So Jerry Cooney had walked right by the ring, right? Well, I was starting to kill. I was getting a lot of good laughs, and I was getting a little bit loose. And you got to turn each way to greet your audience.
Yeah,
because
you're in the middle of
you're
a ring.
You're in a box.
So you're in a round.
You're in a square box, and he walked right by. And it was on the tip of my tongue to say, hey, look, it's Jerry Cooney. It's nice to see in men's clothing again. That's an old joke.
Yeah.
And you know why I didn't do it? Because when we were out in the homeless outreach.
Because Jerry Cooney's 6'7", 250 pounds.
Worse. At 14 and 8th in the meatpacking district was where you go pick up he-she's for mouth sex.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he was seen there at night. So
really?
I might have exposed him. Yeah, he was seen.
Jerry Cooney
was seen at this place a lot at late at night. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
he might have just been walking by.
He lived in Jersey.
Because we were talking about Eddie Murphy.
I know. Dude, I have a story there. When I got the big TV deal, and I signed a very bad contract with the guys that produced my one-man show.
Yeah, I want to get to that.
So then all of a sudden, money was on the table, and they were like, hey, here's the contract where we own 90% of your life, and you own 10%.
Awful.
So I got paired up really quickly with a business manager that was going to help me find all this out. And I'm sitting, waiting to go in, business manager, big, and there's an autograph in neon over the secretary's head. And I don't know why I couldn't read it. I said, what does that say? She goes, that says Eddie Murphy. You're in Eddie Murphy's office. His accountant has an office here.
Wow.
Who's going to be your new accountant?
Wow.
Right? We're better business manager, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I go in, and I mean, I don't know what I was thinking. I said to this guy who's probably owns a huge house because of Eddie Murphy. He's been with him for X amount of years. And at the time, he was with Chris.
Eddie Murphy's accountant in the mid-90s was making some serious money.
And what do I do? I go, hey, I don't know if you're curious. Eddie Murphy goes down by the 14 and 8 with the Heechies. And the guy leans back. He said, you know who you're talking to? He's my number one client. Why would you say that to me? And I was like, I was all red faced. But I didn't.
It was TMI before there was a word.
Yeah, it was
for
TMI.
It.
Or we used to do this overshare. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Yeah.
Overshare.
Yeah. We're friends with one of his paramours.
Favorites.
Oh no shit.
Yeah,
Jamie Gendron. She's a comedian, and she and Eddie Murphy. She's told the story on our show. It's great.
She's a wonderful woman.
She's wonderful. Yeah.
Does she have a A boy Willie or a girl Willie?
She had a boy Willie.
She was with him, she had a boy Willie.
Yes, yes. And she had apparently some very pretty feet.
So let me tell you where the one-man show came from. Yeah. I'll tell you quickly. So I was doing stand-up, and I don't know if you know, I keep a running count of my sets. I know.
You say it on stage. This is set number 10,300.
Well, tonight will be, after this, I'm going to be at the bowling alley, and tonight will be 6,606.
Which bowling alley?
The Corbin Bowl.
Corbin Bowl I go to.
Okay.
Every Thursday.
I might swing by.
Yeah,
so
fun.
Set 72, so it's only a year in, at set 72 was a Caroline's. It was a bringer, and I brought a lot of cops and a lot of relatives.
And Caroline's, by the way, Nicole, is like the number one best comedy club in New York.
Right.
Awesome. Most prestigious.
Right. And this is like a Monday night bringer, but I went overboard. I brought like 50 cops and 50 relatives. Mm-hmm. And I just had not only did I have a really great set, might be the best set I've ever had in hindsight, but my two brothers were in the toy business when people used to buy toys. Mm-hmm. Now kids have little computers and stuff. And their friends in the toy business had made a lot of money with Skydancer. Do you guys know what Skydancer was? You pulled a string.
Oh, yeah. And then
and it flew.
Yeah.
It legitimately flew.
Yeah.
They made that and made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to get into showbiz. So they came to set 72 at Caroline's, the bringer show. They didn't even stay for the whole show. They didn't even get a seat. They just, two brothers. They came in the back. I had a 10 or 12 minute great set. My opening joke. I came out. I didn't smile. I looked like I was like a little bit in a bad mood. And I went, yeah, I'm not having a good day. I tried that phone sex, and the receiver got stuck in my ass. And I made this like weird body motion that like I wasn't even doing a joke. It was just like it really happened.
Yeah, like you had a phone.
And I had a huge applause break, and every joke after that killed. And that night, my brother said, Anthony Gentile said to call him first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived a little bit north of Manhattan, like 50 miles upstate.
Right.
And we had no long distance. We were so broke. All I had was local calls. And I had to get a bunch of change off the floor of the minivan, go to Grand Union, and call from a payphone.
Yeah, supermarket, Nicole.
And Anthony said, hey, man, there's like a real funny theme about being stuck with kids and you're a civil servant. And you think that just because you have a steady check, your life is great. But you kind of, you know what I mean? You sacrifice everything for $10 copayments.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Everyone thinks being a cop's great. It's not great. He said, would you think about doing a one-man show if we financed it and we backed it? Mm-hmm. So that's how, and then what we did for the next 3 or 4 years, he made his wife the director, and every single set I ran and did in all these backroom shitty places went into the one-man show.
Right.
You dig what I mean? So when the one-man show opened on November 6th, 1996, it wasn't like, is this going to work? Because every little piece of it was worked out in a comedy club.
Right.
You dig what I mean? Like, you know, whether it was the story about the homeless people and you know what I mean? And it wind up that kind of hit. And that got a little press and that turned into a sitcom. But I had signed a bad deal with the two brothers, a really bad deal.
And I've heard that not only the deal was bad initially, but then you were on an airplane, they were adding to it.
Yeah, it's funny you know that story. We were flying, now everybody wanted to meet John DiResta.
Okay.
And they had no interest in those two brothers, none, but they owned my life story.
Right.
And so not only did I sign a bad contract, the night the one-man show opened, they didn't even know if it was going to hit, it was like this thick, the contract. It was 30 pages. And as I signed the bottom, I just went like this. I know I'm doing the wrong thing, and I just went like that and handed it to them.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, within 2 or 3 months, the one-man show got a lot of press. Now we're on an airplane to go meet a showrunner or to go meet Disney or to go meet Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And they're like, can you just, we added one page, like handwritten, we own blah, blah, blah. If it turns into a book, we own the book. If it turns into a movie, we own the movie.
Oh, man.
Over in an airplane, handing it back to me like this.
Oh, man.
And every time I was like, this is not right. This is not right.
But you're on a plane from Queens and you're
and watch this. I'm going back to the homeless outreach unit to go give out sandwiches.
Right. Like, so you're still working as a cop.
Within an hour time, you're running from JFK to go on duty.
They got you when you're on a plane. You're like, wow, I'm going to go to Disney. I'm going to be a sitcom. And this is in the 90s when they were.
They were giving a lot of money because Ray Romano and Roseanne.
Right.
Everybody wanted the next.
Tim Allen, Ray Romano, Roseanne.
And this is how crazy your mind can get when you buy your own press. You know, when they say when you, you know, he started to believe his own press.
Yeah.
You believed your own press, John?
Of course. How could I not? Yeah. Look, everybody wants me. I'm funny. There's a unique story. I'm a real New York City cop. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we would fly to L.A. for like a day and go meet with Disney with a limo, you know, go with my producer brothers of the one-man show. So they had to watch everything.
Right.
And by now I had an L.A. agent who very quickly wanted to part with, they didn't want them. They wanted John DeResta.
Right. Right.
So they had to deal with the toy makers.
Right. They didn't want to deal with the toy makers. They're not going to make them any money. They want to deal with John DeResta only.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they developed a wedge. You know, they made sure that wedge went deep. You know, they look at the contract they made you sign. You know what I mean? They don't care about you, but yet they put me in business. You know what I mean? It was a mind fuck. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse.
Please, we encourage profanity.
Yes.
So again, you're in L.A. from 8 in the morning till midnight, and you go, I'm in a limo with the two brothers. And we're going to like, and everything, you know, big gate. Oh, you're John DeResta, hook, line, and sinker at the front. You know, we're waiting for you.
Welcome to Disney. Welcome to Warner Brothers.
Yeah. All that. And we had a limo driver named Omar. And the whole day he didn't say anything. He's just like, okay, next stop is Warner Brothers. We have to drive over to the 134. He didn't say anything. Well, we're hopping the car. Oh, they want us. And we were at a red light right on Barham. And there's Jay Leno in a Dodge Viper.
Right.
And I go, look, like, you know, there's Jay, he's right next to us. Mm-hmm. And Jay Leno goes like this. And I said, and this is a true story. I go, look at this. Even Jay Leno knows who I am. He's waving at me. Wow. And Omar goes, he wants to cut in front. So that's how your mind can.
Right.
And then when the show did hit, here's another two things I look back on. So now we moved to LA, had the sitcom, and right off the bat, it was a bomb. It was on UPN. Nobody was watching it.
Well, here's the thing. Now, they were developing it, and apparently Disney had, and ABC Disney, had interest.
No, they bought it. The deal was with Disney and ABC.
And at the time, Home Improvement was on the air. Home Improvement, then you, sounds like
killed.
A great fit.
Yeah, and I think Roseanne was on the air.
So if you had Roseanne, Tim Allen, and John DeResta.
Yeah,
we signed a deal with Disney and ABC, and I remained a cop for 11 months. Yeah, I don't know if you know that. I was the cop with the sitcom deal in the newspapers, all this money everybody knew about.
How'd that go over with the other cops?
A lot of them were jealous, but here's what happened. I worked, at the time, I worked 9 at night to 6 in the morning, and in the homeless unit, and I would buy dinner for everybody because now I had a little bit of money, and they would let me sleep. So I was literally like one of the homeless people in the van every night sleeping because I was doing the run around with the stand up and stuff.
Right.
And so when we finally moved to L.A.
The 12 arrests in 9 years.
Yeah. When we finally moved to L.A., there's two things I knew that where I had jumped the shark or again, believe my own press. One night I had a relative from New York. We rented a house, the biggest house we could find.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Right. Up by Mulholland almost, like up Laurel Canyon, down in Anita, down in Paguita, right before you get to Laurel Canyon to go back down.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We're on the Studio City side with a view of the valley. 3,500 a month.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Nicole's right there. She's right next door.
3,500 a month.
I've just been to the, there are people that have a great view of Studio City.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. And the steam is coming, it's like the fall, and the steam is coming up and out of the built-in pool at the rental.
Mm-hmm.
And my relative from New York goes, what's with the pool? What's with the steam? Is steam coming out? I go, that's my bank account evaporating into the sky. And I laughed.
That's hilarious.
He goes, what do you mean? I go, well, it's expensive to heat the pool. He goes, well, why don't you shut it off? I go, the button's all the way over there. I might want to swim. Yeah, I want it to be warm. Literally steam coming out of the pool every night instead of just clicking it off. That's one. And then another time, I went to take $200 out of a gas station at Vine and Melrose.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, pip, 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 200. And it thought it gave me 200. And it didn't. Nothing came out. And the receipt said minus 200.
Nowadays,
we've
all been there.
I didn't care. I went to the next ATM. I go, it's only 200. Like, I didn't take the phone. I didn't speak to the guy. You know what I mean? It's only 200.
Oh, okay. Oh,
like I didn't even care.
No, you were okay. So you weren't overdrawn. You just like
No.
The ATM just didn't give it to me. I don't care.
I didn't call the 800 number. No, if you want to go forward about 3 or 4 years, all the money ran out.
No, all of it. Yeah, we're gonna get.
We were living like a black guy with a hit record.
But
I got a phone call from Rockwell today.
Yes, the guy that somebody's watching me, the singer?
So, yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
I always feel like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he has my number, and he calls me sometimes. And so he called me today and wanted to talk actually about the podcast and everything. And then he's like talking about his new opportunities, but he doesn't really have opportunities anymore. So when you said that, it made me think of poor Rockwell, who like had all this money in the 80s, and then it's all like...
It goes, man. Yeah. It goes, especially... I found this out years later that my wife was jealous. Now I had a sitcom wife.
Right. Oh, she was jealous of your sitcom wife?
She was jealous of the sitcom wife, and the money didn't make, you know, hey, this is what we got a nice house. We live in L.A. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
6 months ago, we were broke, living right. in New York with a car that was unregistered that broke down. Now we're living up by Mulholland. You know, we have nice stuff. We have nice cars. And she was jealous of the sitcom wife, and you know how she would get even?
What?
She would go down to Ventura with her credit card and just spend all sorts of money.
Oh, man.
To the point where I used to get calls from the credit card company.
Yeah.
We think your credit card is stolen.
Right.
Because someone just spent $400 here and $800 there. And that was my wife.
Right.
You know what I mean? But the money ran out, and then we had to make the decision. Do we move back to Long Island,
mm-hmm.
fully broke, and move into my mother's house and start over, or do we stay in L.A.? And my parents co-signed a loan against their house.
Oh, man.
For $30,000, I got the check, and we stayed in L.A. and kind of started over.
Right.
And rebuilt. And that's when I started my woodworking business.
Now, just to go back, why did your sitcom end up on UPN instead of
Disney? Oh, okay, I'll tell you.
Because instead of having Home Improvement as a lead-in, you had The Diaries of Desmond Pfeiffer.
Yeah,
and
Desmond the Slave Show, a sitcom about slaves.
Yeah, it was a
slaves.
Sitcom about a slave that worked for Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
And here's the joke. My lead-in was Desmond Pfeiffer.
Right.
We were both pfucked. Somebody wrote that joke for me. I don't know who it was. Here's what happened. Dean Valentine, the head of sitcom and comedy funny at Disney, was the guy that bought my idea.
Mm-hmm.
For 11 months, I met with showrunners and this and that. And we started to write the pilot. And out of nowhere, UPN was going down the tank, and Dean got offered a lot of money to rebuild, to quit Paramount and rebuild UPN.
Okay.
And my agent called me and said, I got good news and bad news. I said, what? She said, Dean Valentine has left Disney, and he's going to go to UPN, and he wants to bring your show with him. And I go, is that the good news or the bad news? It sounds like bad news. She said, well, that's the good news. I said, then what could be the bad news? Because everybody knows UPN was a joke.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She goes, Disney's not interested in you. She said, Dean Valentine himself was interested, not the company
that
Disney.
That makes sense.
So watch this. In hindsight, she said, you can keep the sitcom money. Stay on the job, get to your 15 years to get your pension, because
mm-hmm.
I had 12.
As a cop.
Or you quit the job, move to L.A., and do the sitcom on UPN. Now, who wouldn't do the sitcom? You know, I could be the breakout show. I could be, you know what
right.
I mean? So it went to UPN, and we did 17 episodes, one of which became the least watched half hour in the history of primetime.
Wow.
So I had the lowest rated TV show in primetime. On a network.
Right. And this is before cable. This is
well, you know, they were considered, UPN was considered one of the networks.
So, no, I mean, like yeah. now people watch Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Now, you know,
back then there was like, you know, there was yeah. only a few, so many networks, and Telemundo was beating you.
Was beating me. Again, the best night we ever had was like 2.5 million, mm-hmm. when now that's what a sitcom gets on a real network.
Right.
And the worst, the least watched one was 600,000 people. And
I think I watched that one.
I'm going to tell you another one. Having your own sitcom, everyone thinks your bank account never goes down. You could have no problems.
Right.
It's Shangri-La. But when you're on a sitcom that's not funny and it has your name on it and you don't believe in it and you're fighting with your wife because she has you have a sitcom wife and all the writers are telling you what to do and you have no say. No say. Not a joke. You have no say at all.
Right.
And it just, I equate it with being in a really nice hot shower. From your knees down is dirty water that won't go down from 6 months ago.
Understandable.
And on top of it, we were spending a lot of money. We thought yeah. it was going to last forever. Even the accountant, the business manager, Eddie Murphy's business manager, called a few times.
Yeah.
And said, dude, you don't have a hit show. This thing's on its way to failing. You know
right.
that.
Right.
You know what I mean? As much as you're making every week, and a lot of it, this agent, manager, lawyer, blah, blah, blah. And then you have to pay taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
So he warned me a few times, and then he called one day and said, "Hey, dude, you have about 1 month's worth of stuff you could pay for, and then it's over. Wow. You have 10 grand left in the whole world."
Wow.
Yeah.
And but then you guys started getting into movies. Now,
well, watch this. The sitcom ended.
Mm-hmm.
I did Howard Stern, killed it on Howard Stern about having right. the lowest, about losing my job and my pension.
And also analyzing models for Penthouse.
Yeah, that was a great. It was Howard Stern. It was fantastic. Right, right. But shortly after that, I got into the movie 15 Minutes, a movie with Robert De Niro.
Okay.
And then shortly after that, I got into Miss Congeniality, no right. audition.
Now, did you know Edward Burns before?
We went to the same high school.
Right.
And he was 4 years younger than me. Okay. So at the time, we knew of each other, but we had never met.
Right.
So, and I didn't want to see him. Do you know why?
Why?
Because when I got into stand-up, I sent a psycho letter right to his home. Because I knew where his home was.
Right.
You know what a psycho letter is? Hey, I'm a comedian, too. Can you put me in your movie?
Oh, that psycho letter.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that type of psycho. And I for like the next 4 years, I never wanted to bump into him because I was like begging him for a gig. And then I passed so many auditions for 15 minutes to be his partner in the movie. And sure enough, one day they said, "Hey, Ed's coming in to read with three people, and you're one of them. So you could get this gig." And I was like, oh, so he walked in and he goes, "John DeResta." He put his hand out. We shook hands. And I said, "Ed, I'm sorry about the letter." He goes, "I never even got it." He said, "You've been worried for all these years. My dad probably threw it away."
Yeah.
Then, right then, he started quoting my jokes from Stern.
Awesome.
And I knew that we were going to be buddies.
But he went on Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, brought my name up.
And said, yeah, he said that because Robert De Niro was in the movie.
Yeah.
And he said that all day on set, you would like quote Robert De Niro lines to De Niro to the point where he's like, "I don't even know what movie that's from."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. And I don't think Ed wanted to say it, but one night, me, Ed, and one other cop, the expert that tells De Niro how to do, you know, like the cop expert,
right,
went up to a hotel room. We were invited by Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And we got drunk for hours with Robert De Niro. And that's when me and Ed were doing all the lines from the movies. And we were drunk. And that's when De Niro goes, "Look, I don't even know what fucking movie you're talking about."
Like you were busting out like stuff from The Mission and like.
Oh,
other...
No, you're funny. Not The Mission. It was King of Comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Remember King of Comedy?
Oh, I love King of Comedy.
Yeah. He's literally at 3 in the morning. We were
AKA the comedy scene in 2022. Yeah,
he was pushing us out the door. Yeah. And I was screaming, "So did Hitler." Remember when he said he made a mistake? Yeah. So did Hitler.
Oh, this is the way you guys are like. No, I was like that before.
Yeah.
But
so watch this. I went from sitcom to 15 minutes to Miss Congeniality with no audition.
I just watched for the first time.
With no audition because they just wanted a funny guy with a New York accent.
Awesome.
So no audition. I literally got a phone call that said, "Hey, you got to be on a private jet tomorrow at 8 a.m. And you know what's the cool thing about a private jet? You could bring your own pot. No one checks you.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
You can book me a private jet.
So sitcom, movie with De Niro, movie with Sandra Bullock, then we went broke. So it was like, this is never going to end. I'm going to be rich and famous forever. And I went off the cliff bad.
Now, I just saw Miss Congeniality for the first time.
Right.
This is great. There's a scene where Sandra Bullock is talking to Michael Caine, two Academy Award winners. John DeResta is sleeping in the background. You got paid for that day.
Right, yeah. And if you notice that scene, as an actor, I added the cough and I added the wiggle to keep.
Yeah, no, you did the whole wake up
to
thing.
To keep this. I was keeping the scene alive.
So you were with two Academy Award winners, so you got to.
Well, I've worked with six. Can you name all six? Because I know you did your homework.
Okay, so you got Michael Caine,
right?
You got Sandra Bullock,
right? Twice,
right? Robert De Niro,
twice.
Sidney Lumet. No, he never won an Oscar, but.
I'm pretty sure he did.
No, he didn't.
He didn't?
Well, he had an honorary Oscar, so there you go.
Oh, okay. You're close. You got two more.
Let me see. I'm trying to think because you were in Matthew McConaughey.
That's five. The sixth one is tough. Miss Congeniality 2.
Wait.
African American female.
Oh, Regina Hall.
Regina King, I think is the name.
Regina King. Did I say Regina Hall?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I've worked with six Oscar winners.
Right.
That's amazing. Yeah,
it is. Right. It is.
Because I started Miss Congeniality, too, and I'm sorry I didn't.
But I was in the opening scene.
You had more lines in the opening scene than you did in the first movie.
No, I know. I got shot.
You were in there and Benjamin Bratt wasn't. What happened there?
They think that's why it bombed. He didn't want to be in two.
Right.
They wrote it for them to get married,
right.
And he said no.
Oh, well, money thing problem?
I don't know. I think he just was he turned into a serious actor.
But you have lost so much weight since then.
I was about 250 then, and now I'm about 185.
No, I know, because when I first met you, it was about 7 years ago, and I think that's about the time I was like, hey, you should come on my podcast, and we finally did it now. But
yeah.
But how'd you do it? Because well, I'm losing weight. But
Mark's losing a lot of weight, and I'm just trying to get below a certain number.
Well, a lot of people, they call it crunches.
Right.
I call it trying to suck my own cock.
So that's it. I got to suck my own cock. And
well,
I'll
you got to
keep trying.
Right.
I'm not quitting. I've got 40 years in.
Exactly. Just keep trying.
I might get a few ribs removed.
No, that's Marilyn Manson weight loss plan.
Just does Kenny suck his own cock?
No, they have there's a rumor that he removed his ribs so he could suck his own cock.
Yeah.
You know who can? For real? Ron Jeremy used to be able to.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
And the guy that sings,
well, he probably has to now.
I want to fall in love with you.
Who's that?
Can't think of. He's a handsome guy.
Chris Isaac.
Chris Isaac can suck his own dick.
Chris Isaac can suck his own dick.
You
know who's got a, you know who had a big dick? And I learned this from
Jimmy Kimmel.
No, I didn't know that. But
Jimmy Kimmel,
does he? Okay. I learned this from our friend who was with Eddie Murphy. He said that Eddie Murphy was 9 inches, but River Phoenix was bigger.
Whoa!
Wow.
But anyway, but.
No, so I just started to kind of eat right, and I have a scale right at my bedside, and I literally weigh myself every morning when I wake up.
Same.
And I stopped. I used to be a real big beer drinker. Like, mm-hmm. I used to drink like 5-6 nights a week.
Right.
And I just I kind of switched over to pot. And
that doesn't give you the munchies?
No. It's funny that you asked that. No, pot doesn't give me the munchies, and I'm a weirdo. I could drink coffee up till 2 or 3 in the morning. Like, I smoke pot, listen to heavy metal, and do notes
right.
for my stand up. And I could drink coffee right up till I go to sleep. You know how some right. people have one cup and they can't sleep?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it doesn't really give me the munchies.
Okay. So you drink coffee, you go to sleep, you don't eat. That's great.
Yeah. Do you have any
particular foods that you recommend eating?
I try and cut down on junk food because I don't know if you guys know, I'm a woodworker, so I'm running around all day in the valley.
To get to that, yeah.
I run around the valley all day, and for a long time, it was Big Mac, Burger King, Big Mac, Taco mm-hmm. Bell. Like, the inside of my car, the front right seat, was like 5 feet deep.
I've seen cars like that.
Yeah, with packages.
Those are weed smokers.
Yep.
But no, because your father was a woodworker?
My dad was we grew up in a rich Jewish neighborhood. My dad was the local handyman / carpenter.
Right.
My dad was more of a carpenter, and then I'm more of an artist.
Awesome.
I do reclaimed furniture. Right. I do tables, benches.
You take junk on the street. And by the way, it's the first of the month. This must have been a gold mine for you tonight.
I look for junk all the time. Watch this. You never take the same route to anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in other words, if I'm driving to Reseda,
right.
I'll take Victory there and I'll take Van Owen back to double your chances of finding stuff.
Okay.
Is any good garbage picker.
No, tell Nicole, because I've done this, to drive by a garage sale.
Yeah, the drive-by. I do a drive-by. You know what that is? When you don't get out of your car, you just slow down. You kind of shop from the car.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's called a drive-by.
All right.
I have the sickness. Do you know what the sickness is?
What's that?
The sickness is garage sales and flea markets.
No, my father sells at flea markets.
He does?
He collects antiques, collectibles. Now he's specialized in knives and books mostly.
Well, he has the sickness.
Oh, he has
and
the sickness.
To sell it feeds the sickness.
No, because you can't buy enough and you can't sell enough.
Right. Where does your dad live? What part
of
the
world? He lives in San Diego.
Oh, okay.
But when I was a kid... When I was 10 years old, we took an RV. We were living in Florida. We lived in an RV and did the Swap Meet Tour of America.
Oh, no shit. You guys went around.
From there to Colorado. We went to, like, Perky Owensville, Pennsylvania, and, like,
oh, yeah. I'm always – I don't know if you know, I've been a flea market vendor for 40 years. Did you know that?
I did.
Did you know the day I started the flea market? This is
a true story.
No,
but I'm sure that coincides with set 125.
No, it was, it's funny you say that. No, it was the first day ever we started to sell. Remember those mirrors that said Jack Daniels and Molly Hatchet? Mm-hmm. They were like $5
each.
Oh,
yeah,
and
no,
they
that
fall
was a big
apart.
Swap meet. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I started selling those with Alan Neschlosh, and the first day we ever sold them, someone said, hey, they invented this thing last night called MTV. It'll never last. That was the first day I started. So I used to sell those, and then I rolled it into my furniture. Like, I make benches and stuff.
Molly Hatchet mirrors will last. MTV will not last.
So I've been a flea market vendor a long time, but I was always impressed with the guys that were from different. Like, I'm like, hey, dude, you didn't have a next to me before. Oh, no, I travel. Like, you know, I was right. always impressed with guys that's it. They just travel the world, sell, buy.
That's my dad.
Wow.
And, you know, we would collect, and, you know, now he's been in the San Diego swap meet scene for forever. But yeah, so I'm familiar with.
My dad crossed over, though. My dad's a hoarder. My dad crossed over.
Oh, well, if you ask my mom, my dad's a hoarder.
No, my dad has alleyways in the house. Like, you only walk sideways, and there's like a bad smell of a dead animal.
Right.
Oh, no.
Watch this. My sister yesterday said, hey, because I have two brothers that live in Jersey and New York, one right. Jersey, one New York.
Right.
My sister lives in Long Island. I live all the way in L.A. And just yesterday, Kathleen said, hey, guys, it's time. Dad's neighbors are now complaining. The junk has moved to the front yard. We need to get a dumpster, and we need to start removing stuff. And I just went, that's a good idea, period, send. I didn't say what weekend. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Do you need my help?
Yeah, there will be a weekend one of these days.
Yeah.
Now, so because you live in North Hollywood now. You went from the heated pool.
Oh, dude, I'm the only white guy. I live in the Mexican Triangle.
When did you first hear? We hear it every day. We live in L.A., but when did "What's up, fucker" become a catchphrase for you?
Because my daughter was still young. It was probably like 02, 03. I didn't know I was saying it.
Yeah.
And my
daughter
and her best friend, India, they were only like 9 or 10 at the time. Mm-hmm. And that same daughter now is 30 and pregnant. So it was a really long time ago where I dropped them off at elementary school. I don't know what grade. And I said to Shannon and her best friend, India, I said, have a nice day, guys. And as they stepped out of the car, India went, what's up, fucker? And I didn't even realize I was saying it. So it's funny that you asked that question. So I started using that. But I am the only white guy on my block, and I like it. Because watch this. I rent a house that has all the furniture that's for sale in the driveway.
Right.
And then I have the sickness for reclaimed wood. So I have a huge collection of reclaimed wood that lines my whole house.
Right.
If I lived in a nicer neighborhood, none of that would be stood for. You know, the neighbors would hate it.
Right.
But since I live in a kind of a bit of a ghetto, no one cares. You know what I mean? And I always kind of look for the funny. Like, in other words, to me, it's funnier to live in North Hollywood and be the only white guy on the block and all my neighbors think I'm Chaz Bono.
Right.
You know, that's funnier than living in a nice big house that's paid for that I own. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we wouldn't want that.
Yeah, we wouldn't want that.
But
I don't know if you know, I have a new girlfriend. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Does your wife know?
She died. My wife died about a year ago. Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, we were married 32 years, and she had a small illness, went in the hospital, and did not come out.
That's the worst joke I've ever
heard. Yeah, well, it's not a joke, but, you know, I do a joke. If I bring it up my stand-up, I go, you know, she's in a better place.
Yeah.
Then again, so am I.
Good.
She'd want me to be funny.
Well, you still have her name tattooed on you.
I do, up here, Fran. But in case I go the other way.
I think it's very impressive you guys were together so long.
So long, and with financial problems and drugs and alcohol, not on my part.
For better or for worse.
She was a real team player. So she passed away about a year ago. She went to the big flea market in the sky.
So tell us about your new Chola girlfriend.
Well, she is half Italian, half Amish.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. She's 27 years younger, and people go, you're old enough to be her father. I go, no, I'm old enough to be her grandfather. Thank you.
Yeah.
If you turn 19 around three times.
Well, you live in a Mexican neighborhood, so yeah, the math word checks out.
No, but she lives in Pennsylvania. So that's what I'm getting at. We get along very well, and we visit each other about every 8 or 9 weeks.
Okay.
And I found that we hit it off really well. She's very funny. She's really wise-ass funny. And she's an alpaca farmer. You know the alpaca, animal?
Yeah.
She has 4 or 5 of them, and she lives on a farm, and she grows her own food, and she's a woodworker. That's how we met.
I was going to say, have you guys collaborated?
She's a woodworker. Yeah, we just started trying to make some funny videos together.
On woodwork.
We were thinking the woodworking. Yeah. I love that the comedy is a concept. Yeah,
everybody does YouTube, so I'm just saying the woodwork.
Yeah. So, but again, the reason I bring all this up is not only do we get along very well, it's a funnier thing than just saying, oh, I'm dating another comedian or dating actress that lives in Sherman Oaks.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's funnier that this young alpaca farmer has come into my life.
Right.
Right, and that's great, and I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
I am too.
Yeah, she's helped me get through the last year.
I can imagine it was tough. But this brings me to my next question. I was going to bring this up, because you always talk about being white trash. Aren't you Italian?
I'm half Italian, half Irish.
Okay.
And we grew up pretty
We're both
much-
half Italian,
we grew up like Long Island white trash, but we grew up in a very rich neighborhood.
Right.
So imagine being like, you know, what's a rich neighborhood in Nevada? You know, imagine being the poorest people on the block in Studio City or in Encino.
Yeah.
And the only way we grew up in this nice neighborhood was my dad bought a house on the busiest street.
Right.
Literally, growing up, all of our pets were hit by a car.
Oh,
right.
Man.
Even the fish. That's a busy street.
Did you just not want to do the New York Italian shtick? Like, everybody does that. Like, Dice did it and he's Jewish.
Oh, dude. When I found out that he wasn't the real deal, it broke my heart.
Yeah, Andrew Dice Clay's real name is Andrew Silverstein.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, no tattoos either.
I didn't check.
Yeah. No, I wasn't that Italian. Do you right. know what I mean?
Like, I'm quarter Italian. Nicole said I was half Italian, but I'm a quarter Italian.
Yeah, I wasn't that Italian. To me, being a transit cop and being white trash in a rich neighborhood and having three kids right in a row, you know, those superseded. Hey, got a bada bing.
Yeah, hey, yeah, hey. make the gravy. Yeah.
Is it gravy or sauce?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how did your brother, now you've had three cable shows, one on FX, one on Comedy Central, I believe one on Discovery?
No, the three Fix-It shows were Trash to Cash with John DiResta, name in the title,
right.
was on FX. We did seven episodes.
Right.
That was 2003.
Parentheses, the guy that was sleeping on the plane in his congeniality.
Right. Right.
In
movies with Robert De Niro.
Remember, he was after Desmond Pfeiffer.
Well, watch this. when I came up with the first show, Trash to Cash, my manager, you might know Barry Katz at the time.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Barry goes, I don't really like it. He goes, would Sean Penn be picking garbage and making stuff in a shop? And I said, Sean Penn's not broke.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I could become the king of cable, the funny... So Trash to Cash.
This is before all the Fix-It shows.
This is before all the Fix-It shows and garbage picking shows. And then it went away 2 or 3 years later. Me and my brother got another deal called a show for HGTV called Hammered with John and Jimmy DiResta, naming right. the title again.
Right.
We did 26 episodes of that for HGTV. So we made a little
wow.
money on that one. That went away. And about 4 or 5 years later, me and Jimmy and my son got another show where we picked garbage, but now it was in New York City. So I had to travel to New York.
Right.
That was called, it was supposed to be called Lord of the Fleas.
That's great.
Which would be the hierarchy at the flea market.
Right.
All about like your dad traveled.
No, I know the hierarchy of the flea market.
And they changed the name to Dirty Money. And we did 10 episodes, of which 8 aired. And then after, because Jimmy was in the first one too. So after being effed over 3 times, and while you're doing these shows, you have producers, do this joke, do that joke. You know, they don't trust me and my brother.
Right.
Right.
So after the third one went down, my brother said, I'm done with TV. I'm going to try YouTube. And so my brother became a star on YouTube, right. on the internet.
Right.
And he does very well. And now watch this. He has so many fans. I bet you don't know this. About twice a month, usually at a flea market or a Home Depot, someone sees me and goes, oh, my God. I thought you lived upstate New York. I love your videos. My wife hates you.
They think
I'm him. I let him get it all out, and I go, I'm the loser brother.
So you've gone from the big superstar with the sitcom to Jimmy DiResta's brother.
Oh, 100%. Watch this. The other day, just 2 days ago, he said to me, how is Sabrina doing at the Laugh Factory? I said, she's doing really well. I said, she's a comedy fan. I said, the other day she met Tony Rock. And my brother goes, because I like Tony Rock. He's always very respectful.
Yeah.
The fact that I got a sitcom, he always tells people. I meet him once a year.
I met him once. Nice guy.
Always nice to me. And I said to Jimmy, Jimmy goes, I think Chris is funnier. I said, Tony's always been very nice to me. And my brother goes, imagine being Chris Rock's brother. And I said, imagine being Jimmy DiResta's brother. And I got a big laugh. But yeah, he's definitely Jimmy said this the other day, and this is going to be hard to believe. I never even thought of it this way, but I have like 4 revenue streams, right? I'm a comedian,
mm-hmm. right?
I'm a woodworker,
right?
I get a little pension from the Screen Actors Guild,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know this, I'm disabled.
Okay,
I'm missing
a toe.
Really?
So I get Social Security.
Was it the maggots or what happened?
That's funny. So the diabetes, a little toe, the little toe.
All right, yeah, you don't need that. Does your girlfriend know?
She does, but I try not to shower with her, so I look like an amphibian.
Right. Well, you wear those Amish shoes, so it covers it up.
But
the clogs.
Jimmy told me he has 80 revenue streams.
Wow.
80. So when he does a video and he uses this glue, he gets paid for the glue.
Right, he's got sponsorships.
You know, yeah, he's got all these crazy, you know, what he wears, what he doesn't wear.
He does very well, but he works really hard at it. He even said the other day, he goes, because he's a really good filmmaker. You ever watch any of his stuff?
Yeah, no, I've seen a lot of your stuff.
Yeah, his stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, how did he, I mean, because he was not an on-camera presence. He was a woodworker the whole time, right?
He was a woodworker his whole life, and just little by little, he learned, he's very creative, so that creativity went into making movies. He just had to learn on his own.
Was he
edits his own.
Was he envious of you when you had success initially?
No, because he was doing good himself.
Gotcha.
I never caught that vibe.
Right.
Yeah. No, he was very happy to see me not be a miserable transit cop.
Right.
Living check to check. Dude, I was so broke. We lived upstate New York, so I had to cut through New Jersey to the GW Bridge.
Right.
And there's a fare. You know, it's whatever. It's $4 each way at the GW Bridge.
Yeah.
I learned how to beat the fare. There's like an exit for snow shoveling. You know, like snow shoveling
trucks.
Oh,
I know that trick.
Yeah, I'm saying. I was so broke, I had to beat the fare at the GW Bridge for 5 years.
See, I know that trick, but I can't believe a cop would need to know that trick.
Well, watch this. We were so broke, I told you, you get paid every 2 weeks as a cop.
How broke were you?
On a Wednesday before payday, with no money for gas, no money for food, with 3 kids and a wife, no money, minus 50 in the bank, I'd go to an appliance store and write a check and buy a microwave oven for $190.
Yeah.
I'd go out to the car. I'd sit for a half hour in the cold. I'd bring it back and say, my wife yelled at me. It's the wrong model. She's going to buy it tomorrow. They'd give me back the $190 in cash.
Wow.
And that was all the money in the world for the next 2 days. And then when the check went through, and then the check would go through and you know, would pass.
Wow. That's
great. A few days later.
So, I mean, it's just amazing to me because I'm a single guy and I could barely take care of myself.
Oh, dude, not only did I have 3 kids and a wife, there were times when the boyfriend or the girlfriend lived with us. You know, the friend that didn't have anywhere to stay.
Oh, yeah, I know those people.
Plus a dog and a cat and a dog. You know, there was one point where I had 11 mouths to feed and I was the only one bringing in money.
Wow.
11.
Wow.
Granted, some of them were four-legged.
Yeah.
No, my cat cost me a lot of money. He's worth it, though.
What is it, a dog?
Cat.
Oh, okay.
Her cat's name is Trouble.
Yeah, he's white and fluffy, and his cough is finally getting better. He's been on antibiotics. So.
Oh, nice.
When I got him back from my roommate, he was very malnourished, and he had a respiratory infection and mange.
Oh.
So I've been paying bills to get him to be like a normal cat again, and now he's normal. But the cough lingered, and so we've been trying different things. At first, they like kind of told me there was nothing I could do, and then finally we found some antibiotics that worked. But you have to pay. Like, I have to pay for antibiotics every week. I have to pay these bills constantly.
Right. There's no insurance.
Yeah,
right.
But John has that, but with kids too.
Yeah. So, but I was saying that even just animals are expensive. So you have animal mouths and human mouths. That's a lot of money.
And son had a drug problem for 10 years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Arrested, this, that, stole money from me, stole the only $200 I had on earth, stole it out of my top drawer on Christmas Day.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Merry Christmas.
It's a dry hand job.
Yeah. I do it dry anyway, but that's just me. I like to suffer. But amazing. You have how fun is John?
He's wonderful.
Thank you, guys. It's nice. It's nice to come here.
No, it's great. We got to have you back on. And once again,
I'm always available.
When I can get a fetish model that will dress up in a cop's outfit, which I had planned for today, we're gonna have you back because we barely scratched the surface of your story.
Yeah.
I mean, you skyrocketed to fame, but it wasn't the skyrocket that I thought. It was gradual, and then
gradual, and then I fell off the cliff. And watch this, me going broke coincided with 9/11 for real. Like, you know, like nobody was hiring anyone. No comedy could be done.
Right.
And it's right as my bank account ran out.
Oh, man.
Right. And again, what came out of it, though, was the woodworking business that I do pretty well with.
But you were already passionate about it before.
People always say that to me. They go, it must be your passion. And I say, you know what? I'd rather go in a theater and make $10,000 a show as a comedian, like Sebastian Maniscalco.
Well, I know comedy is your passion because you do it all the time.
Well, it's easier. There's no heavy lifting.
Right.
But the woodworking is, watch this. I found a job, a side hustle, where I have no boss.
Mm-hmm.
I could make my own hours.
Right.
I could smoke pot.
Right.
And I listen to heavy metal. I'm completely addicted to heavy metal. I don't know if you know that. For real.
No, I know.
I listen to 50 metal songs a day for the last 40 years.
That's great.
Right. Yeah. What's your
Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath?
Yeah.
I know you like Motorhead, too.
Motorhead. I met Lemmy.
Yeah.
I met Lemmy, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I never met Lemmy. I've been in the Rainbow so many times. Everybody's like, oh, he's there every fucking night.
Not anymore.
Well, obviously not anymore. But when he was alive, people were like, oh, he's there every night. I never saw him. But everybody I know has met him.
I met Black Sabbath, with and without Ozzy.
Right.
Okay. I met Van Halen with and without David Lee Roth.
David Lee Roth, yeah.
And I met Caitlyn Jenner with and without a penis. Hello! No, I listened to Black Sabbath, Van Halen, you know, all 80s metal.
Now, take us out with a Lemmy story.
Oh, okay. Well, there's two of them.
Okay.
I met him when I was about 16 at a record store in Long Island. And it was very, you know, generic, shook his hand. But I have a great photo with him and John Sarrow.
Right.
Both of them are now deceased.
Did the warts come out good?
The warts?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had them all. And yeah. I think he might have had his original teeth. If you ever saw his original teeth, they were nasty.
Oh, yeah.
He had summer teeth.
No,
Some here, some are there. But I just told someone this. When I was 41 years old, I saw Motorhead on Sunset at the House of Blues, and I was 41 years old, and everyone kept looking back at me like I was the chaperone that drove the party van.
Right.
Because I was so older than everybody.
Yeah, when you're 40, it's, but Lemmy had to be like 60 then.
But, yeah, but the one thing I noticed, I think the last song he played, I can't remember if it was Ace of Spades, but the last song, the light, you know, they saved the special lights and all this, and as he's doing this crazy jam on the bass, someone takes a full beer, plastic cup, and throws it at him, and
it hits his
guitar and splashes up in his face, and it was set up.
Oh, I
could tell. He kind of moved to the edge of the stage, and like, you know what I mean? In the middle of him doing his thing, he like, you know, he turned his head just as it came.
So
it was just a little funny, like staged, like, you know, oh, it's so crazy.
You as a performer would know that, but nobody in the crowd.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Well, watch this. I opened up for a Tom Lykus. You remember him?
The radio guy.
2,500 drunken Mexicans at the Wiltern Theater. And I came out, and I had a bottle of Jack Daniels, a little one.
Right.
And I dumped it out and filled it with iced tea.
Right.
Like a maggot.
Right.
And I came out, and sucked it down, and then I started my act like I'm so crazy.
Yeah.
And the only person I saw that night that knew me, you probably know him. You know Eric Shantz?
Yeah.
Eric goes to me, that was apple juice, right? I go, it was. I go, how did you know? He goes, I just got the feeling. It was really funny.
Michael Anthony from Van Halen used to do that.
Oh, was it apple juice?
I don't know what he put in there, but he would like chug a bottle that
he
was like
a steak. Whole bottle.
Yeah, but it was obviously.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, right. You can't. How could you? You know, perform.
Right.
I don't know, but I've seen you perform many a time. You're very funny, and man, what a life! What a comedian!
I might do another one man show about the, you know.
I would love to hear it. I would love to. I would love to for you to comp me, and I'll see it. But
there you go.
But John, tell everybody what you got going on, and what flea markets you'll be at, and swap meets.
I sell at the Melrose Trading Post a lot. Or you can find me at John DeResta on Instagram. And I just booked a New Year's Eve gig.
Oh yeah, tell me about
that. I'm going to be in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Amish country.
Two shows. Is it Amish?
I don't know.
Two shows, one night. $2,000 and they'll pay air, so $2,500.
That's great.
Yeah,
it's not a bad little deal.
That's fucking awesome.
But it's gonna be cold.
It will be very cold.
Yeah.
Kenosha, don't you know?
Don't you know?
Who's the most famous person from Kenosha? See, I do my homework.
I didn't do my homework on Kenosha. Brett Favre.
Mark Ruffalo.
Oh,
Mark Ruffalo.
I like Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So. Well, we could talk to you all night.
And then also, who's the guy that shot those three people and got away with it? That was in Kenosha.
I don't know.
Remember, only like last year, they put him on trial. Shot three people at some kind of BLM.
Oh, I know that.
You know
guy.
Who you're talking about, right? Yeah, the white guy, young white guy.
Yeah,
that was in Kenosha.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
But that's not a funny story.
No.
No, but you know, be careful.
Yeah.
I mean, with Mark Ruffalo and a shooter, Kenosha sounds like a wild place.
I just want to live.
It sounds almost sounds like NoHo.
Yeah.
But John,
Brooklyn with palm trees.
What's that?
Hollywood is Brooklyn with palm trees.
Yeah, it's gonna be L.A. with snow. Apparently.
Watch this. When my wife was still alive, she every morning she'd go, "How come we don't go for a walk in North Hollywood? How come we just don't walk? Why should we go for a walk?" And I never told her. I don't want to be attacked by a loose pit bull. That's the kind of neighborhood I live in.
We were hanging out in North Hollywood. We know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, John, it's been a treat. It's been so much fun. Let me. You like poetry?
Sure.
Well, then you should read Nicole's new poetry book, Slow Burn. Tell everybody about it.
So you can get Slow Burn if you follow me on Instagram or on Facebook. I have the link in my bio. My Instagram is at Nicole6Books, and my Facebook is NicoleH6.
And you can get Slow Burn at Lulu.com, not Hulu.com, which is what I keep saying. But
Nice, yeah. Who doesn't like poetry?
Yeah. And you can also get her other book. She'll hook you up. Her first book was called Some Fucked Up Shit, and it's very appropriate. I'm Goth Comedian on all social media. This has been a blast. Everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Thank you.